Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Welcome everybody to the Dialogue. Wirepoints executive editor and founder Mark Glennon is joining me. I'm Ted Dabrowski, and today we're going to talk a little bit about free speech and censorship. And that's been the big news recently. If you're not following it, and thanks to Elon Musk and what's going on with him and Twitter, everybody's talking about it. If you know Mark, and before I met Mark, I knew that he was a free speech champion, a First Amendment champion, and it's one of the things that inspired me to work together with Mark. And so he's a passionate person about this. So he's a person that will take you through free speech, but not just nationally, but what we're focused on is Illinois primarily. And if you look at Illinois media, you're going to find out that there's a whole bunch of stuff that's never mentioned here. You would think that there's some kind of embargo on certain issues, that there's a club or something that says, here's the stuff we're going to talk about, and here are the things that we are not going to talk about. So with that, Mark, let me bring you in. The big news around here was the disinformation conference that was held. It was fascinating because the disinformation conference was a disinformation conference. And it got a lot of headlines, some fireworks, when a few University of Chicago students asked some pretty basic, and done very politely, some very basic questions about free speech and about how much bias there is. And so, Mark, why don't you, break us in on that?
Yeah, Ted, it's really a wonderful thing to see nationally, this discussion now going on, thanks to Elon Musk and his attempt to buy Twitter. This is all over the national headlines. And I'm going to correct one thing you said. You said everybody's not talking about it in Illinois. And that's where the problem is. And this free speech conference, disinformation conference, as it was labeled, sponsored by a group at the University of Chicago and Atlantic, the publication The Atlantic. As you said, the fireworks happened when a few students from the Chicago Thinker, a wonderful student publication there, asked some very polite questions. I mean, they had Brian Stelter, of all people, from CNN on the disinformation conference, and they very politely went through many of the items of disinformation that he's peddled and asked him about it, and they brushed him off rudely. Stelter gave no answer. Same thing with one of the writers from the Atlantic, who was asked about her question. She was asked about the Hunter Biden laptop, which is, of course, a national controversy now. Again, you won't read about it in Illinois because it's like there's a blackout on this topic. John Cass has a new article saying the same thing that we did in our article about this conference, which is that it's blacked out in Illinois discussion. There are a couple polite articles giving a nice spin to the conference, but nothing about the real controversy that occurred there and garnered national headlines. So we have a real problem here. This is not dangerous. This is happening. It's undermining democracy. And Illinois is getting left out of the conversation on this. It used to be, Ted, that the media was the real champion of free speech. Boy, anything that attempted to silence somebody would be met immediately by editorials and harsh criticism. And it didn't matter if it was left or right, or true Nazis speaking up or anything else. Now they've gone silent on this. They're very complicit on it. And the Hunter Biden email story, which underpinned some of the questions, at least one of the questions from the University of Chicago kids, is a great example. If you look at the syndicated headlines that come from the national press that are reprinted in our newspapers around here, you'll find plenty saying, from a year and a half ago, whenever it was, that the Hunter Biden laptop was planted by Russians. Well, they were the ones peddling what turns out to be a Russian conspiracy theory. And even the New York Times and Washington Post, who had peddled that, have now backpedaled on it. And they've acknowledged that the laptop is legitimate. This could have turned the election. Some 16%, according to one poll, said that if they had been aware of this, They would have voted differently last time around. But the our press here doesn't have a single story about this. And you can do a search on the Tribune sometimes. And I hate to single them out because a lot of other papers syndicate these national headlines. And a lot of, you know, news readers, average voters are not as attentive as I think most of our Wire Points readers are. They, you know, they glance at their local paper, they turn on local news maybe for a little bit, and that's about it. So, that, you know, they're in the dark about this stuff. And so it's a wonderful development to have this topic unfolding. We just have to somehow get it to come to Illinois and get some introspection here about the media. Ted, you can talk about our experience with COVID. How many articles have we done, Ted, you and I both, pointing out policy errors or facts hidden during the course of the pandemic? We are the only ones in Illinois who have written about that topic. You'd think there's no controversy whatsoever about Illinois' policy response to COVID. These things, again, get debated viciously in the national press, but it has been entirely ignored here. Ted, you've been on the radio and other places talking about this. Why don't you give a couple examples of some of the things you've written about on COVID policy?
Yeah, Mark, you know, we've had a tremendous time, you know, trying to cover lots of issues that we think should have had, you know, great state coverage, especially the beginning when we're talking about hospitalizations. You know, we kept attacking the fact that they wanted to keep focusing on cases, and they would just ignore the fact that what really mattered were hospitalizations and deaths. And then, you know, we tried to get things on antibody testing and things like that. And like you said, nobody cared. Now, when we say nobody, there's a few radio stations who would listen to what we had to say and actually, you know, embraced us coming on. But for the most part, certainly the written press totally ignored all these issues. They preferred to follow the standard line that the Pritzker administration and the IDPH were giving out. And I think it became, and I've said this before, you know, Governor Pritzker has done an amazing job of kind of anointing who should be listened to and who should not be listened to. And he's done a good job of calling different groups carnival barkers or different kinds of names, grifters, of the people he doesn't like, either what they're saying or what they're doing. And the media has been very cautious and has followed along. So this has been a big problem. So it's not just a, you know, like you say, not just a problem about whether it's, you know, Hunter Biden's laptop or things like that. It's basic news stuff. And of course, we can expand that onto many other issues besides COVID, but COVID is a particular one where, and that mattered a lot in the last 2 years, right? We're talking about people's lives and their livelihoods. So you're spot on.
Yeah, Ted, and thank you for bringing up radio, because that is a ray of hope, and that is an exception to what I'm talking about. They've been very kind to us. We are on as radio guests frequently around the state. And I'm not talking about right-wing shows either. It's ones that are very balanced. I think they do a very good job. Tom Miller, for example, he'll bring on people from the administration, from the Pritzker administration, lets them talk, lets them present up their case, and then will let us do the same. And I have no complaints about them. And radio is still a significant source of news. In fact, I saw somebody allege that the listenership for primetime radio, which is in the late morning, is as large as the evening big shows on cable network, Fox, CNN, MSNBC. I'm not sure that's true, but I do know that it at least rivals those numbers. So that let's hope that continues. That's one source, but we got to somehow crack into the rest of the media just to present things fairly. This is democracy does not function without a First Amendment. That sounds like a platitude. Without free speech, rather, it goes beyond the First Amendment. Without free speech, and You know, people wonder why Illinois voters continue to make bad decisions. Well, they just don't know the facts often. And this is really core to fixing Illinois, in my view, and it's fundamental also to what America is supposed to be about. Ted, you said correctly that I'm a free speech solid guy, but am I overstating this, or what's your sense of this?
Well, hell, you know, I think a big part of it is just what you said, facts. You know, facts are tricky things, right? Numbers are tricky things. Everybody's got their own side of facts, if you want to say that, you know, how you slice data, what you show. It's really easy for one group, and especially if it's a monolithic group, like well, let's call it the corporate media, which is the, you know, the new term. The corporate media likes to present a fact, and you know, they want it to be truth. And that's the same on COVID or on, I don't know, tax policy or gas taxes in Illinois. And you know, what I really like is just various groups having a voice and presenting their side. And you know, each group has to be persuasive. They have to use facts and data and logic. And so when you talk about things like COVID, you know, there's a lot of groups. And if you look, like you said, nationally, there's a lot of groups that were presenting all kinds of different data. You had all kinds of different people doing research, analysis, some things, you know, quote that were on my side. I was skeptical of because I wasn't sure, you know, I want to see the data too, but you know, that's what we're talking about, Mark. Just good old fashioned, you know, showing both sides, three sides, four sides of an equation, of an argument, and you know, letting people hear it, letting people create their own, you know, their own judgment. But not only that, you know, when you have multiple sides, it puts everybody, you know, what's the right term? You know, if I hear somebody say something that's different from what I said, I've got to be better now defending why I'm saying it, and you know, how do I back it up? And I think that's what people need. And when you only have one side, and if you shut down, you know, other arguments, well, then you know, it makes people really dumb. Listen, I want to make a point. I have a family member, and I always talk about this family member. You know, he/she reads the paper, just the Tribune, and then watches local news, and that's it. That's their news consumption. They will never hear, you know, a huge number of arguments on a whole bunch of stuff because NBC, you know, or ABC, whatever, will never carry a lot of these stories, nor will the Tribune, and they miss out on what's happening in the world.
Yeah, Ted, and you know, just on COVID policy, every single one of our criticisms has been validated now. You mentioned hospitalization data. The CDC just recently really emphasized that and said they're not paying attention at all to case numbers. The Illinois Department of Health did that too after our criticism was up, and you know, that's perhaps why you see hospitalization numbers. I think it's because we pestered for it very aggressively. This, of course, brings in big tech, which is just as
hey Mark, can I emphasize just one thing?
Sure.
I want to emphasize, this is amazing, right? So here, 2 years, you know, right now, COVID's not over, but COVID's in a lull, or it's over, who knows, whatever, but it's certainly at a lull. And it's amazing now that they're saying, well, we're no longer going to talk about cases and case positivity. They were obsessed for 2 years with cases and case positivity. And, you know, and we pushed back, like you said, hard on that. And now here we are 2 years later, and it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe cases and case positivity don't matter anymore. We're not going to that's not our main tracking points. That's a phenomenal statement, and you know, and they're going to do it in a very calm way, as if you know, it's just time to change how we measure things. It's, I guess, I'm not sure what the right word is, but they were wrong for 2 years, and now they're, you know, finally admitting it, I guess.
Yeah, and Ted, the big tech platforms, of course, are a big part of this. That's what Elon Musk's controversy has really brought to light, and it's good to see that taking place. But it happens here in Illinois too. I mean, one of the large dissenting groups was called the Great Barrington Declaration Group. For a while, Google was suppressing that term. If you did a search, nothing showed up. And it's led by top epidemiologists, Gupta from Oxford, Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford, a number of other, I mean, it's hundreds of people have signed on to the declaration. there's been no mention of this here. In fact, the only mention of any of these challenges to official COVID policy that I recall came from Greg Hines at Cranes, which talked about some of our stuff and said we were trying to throw Granny under the bus. You know, that's the extent of their analysis on it. It was ridiculous. Another recent example, Ted, of how suppressive they've become. A poll was taken by Issues and Insights. It's a national publication on whether people think that COVID policy had been driven by politics. And it overwhelmingly showed that people did think it was driven by politics. So what's the result? Google and AdSense responded by labeling it as dangerous content and stripped its ads from the article. Google is among the worst. It's not, just Twitter and Facebook. But this stuff goes on day in and day out in Illinois. Just this week, the University of Chicago's own official newspaper, not the Chicago Thinker, got national attention because they came down against open debate, basically. National Review story on it. You'll find other national stories on it. No mention in Illinois. Go down the list of some of the other things that we've reported on. Matt, our colleague, had a great story with hard numbers on why mass incarceration is a myth. Nothing picked up in Illinois. They'll continue to repeat the myth. Nothing about that.
Mark, just to point out that WVON, the black radio station in Chicago, carried that piece. So that was really interesting that they alone were willing to talk about the issue, have Matt come on the show and debate the issue. So again, that's just another point where radio has been much better than the print media.
Yeah, and we should say, Ted, on some things, the Illinois press has picked up its game a little bit, I think. They were quite thorough, I think, and honest about their coverage of the budget. A lot of criticism about that new requirement of signs, at gas stations, crediting the government for cutting gas taxes, which they actually didn't do, and for temporarily suspending the tax on groceries. And the Chicago press is tough on the city council and on Lightfoot. They have consistently been that way. But the problem is censorship, and I think some of the unwitting censorship that people are subject to, largely because of the what goes on with these tech platforms. Paul Vallis was suspended from Twitter only temporarily for about a week. The Center Square at one point was suspended too, for reasons I couldn't even identify. The Vallis said, we'll do a story about this. We're trying to get to the bottom of what prompted a suspension of Paul Vallis. He's the former head of the Chicago Public School System, an extremely knowledgeable guy. But this is crazy for this stuff to be happening. And they know they can get away with it. They got away with it in the last election cycle. They'll probably be even worse in the coming, in the coming cycle, unless this gets corrected. Again, just let's hope that the national debate about these things starts trickling into Illinois, because it's not there. Ted, another example is the DEI policy at the University of Illinois, which we wrote about. Very oppressive. It basically forces the faculty there to speak and act in accordance with woke standards on racial issues. This has gotten some national attention. Ted, our article on it was reprinted nationally. We've gotten calls from lawyers around, at least one lawyer from outside the state, another one in-state, talking about what a easy lawsuit this should be. But it doesn't get any coverage. There were a couple minor news stories downstate near Champaign or Urbana about it, but nothing critical or analytical or thorough. It just goes on and on. There's stories, story after story like this. The Chicago Fed has a member on its board who is an anti-speech, anti-free speech nut. She frankly, I mean, she's a nut. She had a University of Chicago economist basically terminated from his work with the Chicago Fed merely because he thought that defunding the police is a bad idea. Now she's a nominee to be on the National Federal Reserve Board. We wrote about this. Nothing else that you've seen elsewhere. And that's the kind of thing that'll get you, you know, kicked off Twitter or Facebook or, you know, suppressed on Google if they catch it. And they often do catch it on the big stories.
Yeah. And Mark, to be clear on that story that you're talking about now, you know, defunding the police is gone as an issue, right? And, you know, you've got, you know, like Lori Lightfoot saying, I'm funding the police, I'm putting more money in. So that whole narrative is gone. And I think because everybody realizes it's a failed narrative or a failed action, let's put it that way. So, you know, you same thing on COVID, all those things, a lot of things that people said that was, you know, was a heresy, you know, a year ago, now it's coming to be true. And yet a lot of people got canceled. And we've certainly seen cancellations on campuses across, you know, across the country and in Illinois, you know, killing free speech.
Ted, you achieved at least a small victory at the school level. I mean, a lot of this hostility to free speech is taught by schools. And at New Trier, we were active in trying to make sure that dissenting voices are allowed and tolerated among the students, which they hadn't been for a while. But you got a policy pass there. This was work outside of wire points, but tell us what you achieved there with their new policy.
Yeah, so we've got a great group in the New Trier area called New Trier Neighbors. And New Trier Neighbors has started, maybe 5 years ago when they took on, there was a race day at New Trier, and they were pushing, you know, one side of the race discussion. And, it upset a lot of parents because they felt like the two sides of the whole identity politics, you know, weren't being presented. You know, guys like, you know, think about the things that a Thomas Sowell might say, or a bunch of the leading blacks who, you know, more conservative, none of their voices in the kind of things they would say were there. And so New Trier Neighbors opposed that. And so it's New Trier Neighbors has come along, a big defender of free speech and of just making sure that our kids learn all sides of an equation. We don't want one side. I'm a board member there. And one of the things that was interesting is we saw is, you know, a lot of speech was being squelched at the school district level. And, you know, we with others, you know, we loved, the Chicago freedom of expression, the University of Chicago one, where, you know, they promote free speech and they defend free speech. And so the Chicago statement was something that, we recommended in some way to the school board to think about accepting because it was going too far the other way. And, you know, we're fortunate to see the board take a Chicago statement and amend it somewhat for a high school, right? The free speech in college maybe is a little bit different than high school, but they amended it in a way that I think was satisfactory to New Trier Neighbors. And it's good to see that they were willing to put that out there. Now, the question, of course, is for any school district that has something like this. And we think this is the only high school district in the country that's done this so far. So it's a pretty big deal. Now, the question is, do they take that free speech statement and you know, put it out front and make sure that the school district and the kids and the teachers are all living it? We want to see more of that. But the good news is that they were willing to, and kudos to them, to actually support a free speech type statement. We need more of it.
We do. And that's part of the problem is that students today are simply not taught to listen to both sides of an issue, forced to take opposite sides on debate. They don't even hear the other side for the most part. That was a small victory. We need more of that. And I would hope people would consider pressuring their school boards to do the same around the state of Illinois. Ted, what I don't get too is as a business matter, the media, print media especially, which is suffering for economic reasons, has a trouble with any viable business model. They're basically excluding the right half of the population. People don't want that. They want to hear both sides. They want to see both sides. Ted, I don't know if you noticed, but on our analytic pages that we see, people now spend an average of 3.5 minutes on our homepage. That's because they like to see both sides. You know, 2/3 of our homepage is not our stuff. It's links to other opinions and other sites. We aggressively put up opinion pieces and news reports that we may not like because we believe in that kind of debate. But apparently the public likes this too, and they want to see more of it. And I just don't get why the media is doing this to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, just to your point, and you've done this for a long time, is putting up both sides of the arguments. You know, anybody who's followed our work knows that the exact opposite of what we propose is what Ralph Martiri proposes. He's the center of CTBA, Center of Tax and Budgeting Accountability. He he proposes, you know, he supports all the progressive taxes. He wants a bigger government, all that. But yet, you know, we will publish his work on our site because we want people to see that argument. It's good. They can contrast what we say. And again, we've got to win the competition for reason and logic and our ideas. And frankly, I think it's better when they see Ralph's, because Ralph says the opposite of what we do. And that's how you foster debate, and that's how you foster better thinking. And
we put up his pieces immediately when we see them, all the time. That's where what's most interesting about the national debate, Ted, is that the left has really exposed themselves for what they are. They don't believe in free speech. And this outpouring of hatred, and it really is hatred directed towards Elon Musk, is unvarnished. They're open about it. One conspicuous example is Robert Reich, former cabinet member, a liberal economist. He's got a piece up in The Guardian saying directly that Musk and his view for the changes he'd like to see at Twitter are fascist. It's the same kind of tactic that has been used traditionally by repressive fascist regimes around the world. Of course, it's exactly the opposite. What Musk wants to do is make it a neutral platform. Their basic concept is that if you don't agree with our policies, then you are fascist. I mean, that's their summation of free speech. There is no place for conflicting viewpoints. And skim the headlines and the commentary today and yesterday that have been coming up about Musk from around the country. And you see a lot of this from the left. They've really taken off any pretense of being other than what they are. And, it's such a shame because the left, frankly, used to be the champions of free speech, and the press used to, too. As I said, they would be all over any repression of free speech in the old days. Not anymore.
Mark, you asked one question about why the left has gone this far, even though they're not having success with it, at least on the print. Well, I think the big reason why is because you've got all these oligarchs, right? You've got the Washington Post with Bezos, you got Zuckerberg, right, on Facebook. So they dominate right now. And so they can have some level of comfort because those platforms have in the short term won out. And, you know, what's really interesting about this is, you know, the other side is saying, how dare an oligarch like Musk come in and try to, you know, impose his views, you know, ignoring the fact that you've got Zuckerberg and Bezos running these things. So it's a bit of hypocrisy there.
You know, one source of the problem, Ted, for those tech platforms is their employees out in Silicon Valley. They are radically left and are all in favor of this kind of free speech stuff. I used to work in the tech community. It wasn't so much in that way in Chicago, but on the West Coast, it is intense. And you've seen it sometimes. There's you can find a leaked video of a Google all hands meeting. I mean, it's just stunning how aggressive they are about the average employees are about pressuring their management to engage in woke politics and to suppress opinions that they dislike. And I continue to hear this from friends who are still with those companies and are in contact with people in the Valley. It's a serious problem for the managers in many of those institutions. And
for sure.
Well, Ted, we're going to wrap it up, but the point here is that pressure has to be brought on the media. The public has to speak up in any way they can to try to get this changed. We need a robust debate on the issues in Illinois, and we need to bring this national intense dialogue about free speech that is now going on thanks to Musk, bring it to Illinois, because it's not here yet.
Yeah, Mark, another key point is, you know, speaking about Illinois in particular and the trouble that Illinois is in, you know, if the other groups aren't, if the other companies aren't going to speak up, then it's important to support groups like Wirepoint. So, you know, we gladly accept any support from those of you who wish to support us and other groups who are, you know, Center Square is doing a great job, I think, of speaking up and trying to promote the news. There's quite a few good groups in Illinois. We're all smaller than the traditional media, but I think we're growing. So that's one way. The other thing that's important too is that, you know, we keep finding pockets of where we can get in. The Tribune editorial page this past week ran a piece for Wirepoints, one of our commentary pieces about the reforms we'd like to see. Most newspapers won't talk about the real changes needed in Illinois. And so it's good to see them do that from time to time. We just need more of it. So, we need to ensure, hold these places accountable, get them to cover both sides of the problem in Illinois, because if we don't, as we said in our editorial, people will just keep leaving. And that of course is a death spiral for Illinois.
Well, that wraps it up for this week. We'll talk to you next time on the Dialogue by Wirepoints. Thank you.